This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
In an announcement on March 4th, McDonald's released their newest policy changes to food found on their menu, saying they would only have chicken raised without antibiotics that are important to human medicine and no RBST in the milk served. Justin Ransom, McDonald's U.S. Supply Chain Management Quality System Senior Director, explains what this means.
It's important to note that we're focused really on, at least in the chicken supply chain, specific to those antibiotics that are important in human medicine. And we didn't come out with a policy that was no antibiotics ever. We felt the right thing to do was really to continue to allow the use of ionophores, an important antimicrobial that's used in chicken production to prevent coccidiosis in the poultry industry. And ionophores allow us to continue to raise birds in a way that prevents them from getting sick.
Ransom says the policy is based off the World Health Organization.
We base our global policy off of the World Health Organization's criteria for important antibiotics. So those antibiotics are important, highly important, and critically important, have been identified, and we have established a policy that those antibiotics are no longer going to be allowed in poultry production in our U.S. supply chain.
Several different groups assisted in creating the policy.
We've been working with our poultry suppliers over the last number of years to reduce the use of medically important antibiotics. More than a year ago, we put together a group of experts, really, from all over the world who, whether they're veterinarians or involved in academia throughout the world, to really help us develop a new global policy. It was really bringing together the best minds about how we try to can do our part in reducing the use of antibiotics in our supply chain.
So why get rid of RBST milk on their menu?
I don't know if you're familiar with the campaign that we launched last fall, Our Food, Your Questions, where we answered, I think, about 40,000 questions from America's consumers, and that was certainly one of the questions they asked us a lot about. Moms are concerned about RBST and feeding that to their children. And as you might know, milk is a common option that is selected in our Happy Meals. And so that was one of the primary reasons we did it, was because it was really a request from our customers.
Ransom says the data showed there's no significant difference between milk from cows treated with RBST growth hormone and those that aren't, but the changes were made based upon what consumers were telling McDonald's that they want. He said they still support the decisions producers are making.
We believe that a lot of the practices that are going on in production agriculture are certainly in the best interest of farming and the animals, and we're just doing our part to make sure that we can meet our customers' expectations and that there's really balance, and it's an essential balance that we have to continue to look for.
They predict completed milk changes by the end of this year and chicken changes within the next 2 years. More info on their policy can be found at news.mcdonalds.com. For a look at this week's livestock markets, I spoke with market analyst for Water Street Solutions, Arlen Suderman.
Well, we started off the week on an up note after seeing surprisingly strong cash trade up to 165 on a live basis in the cattle market in the Plains and the Western Plains on Friday afternoon. And so that gave us a nice lift with prices in the lead contracts in both the cattle, live cattle and the feeder contracts gapping above the 100-day moving average. Following that, we see a little bit of turnaround Tuesday action with a little bit of back and fill action. One of the problems of the beef complex, even though supplies are very tight, the fundamentals that seem to be friendly, supporting higher prices, is the beef sector must deal with cheap pork and cheap poultry prices that seem to be in abundance at the retail level right now, making it tough for the beef to hold on to its market share.
That situation most likely won't get any better with the avian flu spreading throughout the states, reducing poultry export options.
Avian flu is the other big stumbling block for the meat industry right now, as more and more states keep getting added to the list with positive tests of avian flu, therefore being put on export restriction lists. And as that increases, then that starts putting more poultry backing up at the U.S. domestic retail level, competing with pork at cheaper prices and ultimately with beef. One of the keys right now is we've been able to keep avian flu out of the critical production areas of the Southeast, particularly Alabama and Georgia. As long as we're able to do that, those states can meet much of the export business and we can meet domestic need from other states.
A drop in poultry exports, though, may mean more export potential for other meat markets.
It breaks down to the different markets. Our number one market for poultry has been Mexico. And with Mexico, there is a tendency that when poultry supplies are not there, they tend to switch to hams, and so that could boost the U.S. exports of hams in that region and help the pork industry deal with some of its surplus supply in the freezer.
When looking at the grain markets this week, market analyst for Water Street Solutions Arlen Suderman says the markets seem to be bullish overall.
It's been a good week overall for the grain markets. We're seeing a little bit of back and fill today after having good gains on Monday and on Friday. We're starting to turn the chart signals higher. Wheat probably has the strongest charts, followed by corn with soybeans dragging reluctantly behind. And that's probably appropriate for this time of year. The speculative funds had built huge short positions or sold positions in wheat. And this is a risky time of year for them to hold those positions because it's when the crop is most vulnerable. On the other hand, soybeans probably have the most bearish fundamentals long term, and that's why they're reluctant to go higher. But overall, they still are trending higher, although reluctantly and still vulnerable to another break lower. Corn, on the other hand, needs to focus on trying to make sure it gets a few more acres going into this growing season, just in case we encounter a weather problem along the way.
The reasoning behind these bullish trends? A weaker dollar.
We saw a sharp break in the dollar following the Fed's policy statement that came out last week, Wednesday. And the Fed kind of played a good cop, bad cop scenario, saying they'll remove the word patient from their statement on interest rates, leaving the door open now for raising interest rates at some point in one of their future meetings, but then talking down the economy and generally giving an impression it'd be quite some time before they would raise interest rates. So that caused the dollar to finally have a significant correction lower. The big debate now is whether that correction is over or going to extend further, and that has big implications. When the dollar goes lower and when traders feel confident the dollar is going to continue going lower, they tend to push more money back into the commodities after being short the commodities for many months. On the other hand, when the dollar rallies, they tend to pull back and start selling the commodities once again. And grain and oilseed prices have been particularly sensitive to this movement in the dollar over about the last 7 or 8 weeks.
In addition to a weaker dollar, the grain markets are also being influenced by trader anticipation of the March 31st USDA acreage estimates report, but Suderman cautions that report may not be the most critical one to watch out for.
That'll be the next opportunity for the market to refocus on the fundamentals, as it's trying to do now, and all the focus right now is on the acreage estimates. After USDA spent a couple weeks surveying farmers across the country on their planting intentions for this coming year, the general consensus thus far, based on some of the private estimates come out, seem to be centering around about a 2 million acre decrease in corn acres and a 2 to 2.5 million acre increase in soybeans. I think the increase in soybeans will be a little bit more than that, the decrease in corn acres a little bit less than that. But overall, that's generally the consensus right now that the trade is looking for. I think we'll see probably continued volatility ahead of that March 31 report. But ironically, with all the eyes on the acreage report, they're not talking too much about the quarterly stocks report. And historically, that's where some of the biggest surprises have come in past years.
Suderman says it's hard to predict what could be reported in the quarterly stocks report, making it tricky to determine what will happen in the markets.
When it comes to quarterly stocks, generally it's expected to confirm that we have big supplies of corn and soybeans. However, these reports have been known for their surprises, and as I study the tendencies of USDA, I can find some big tendencies in a lot of their different numbers. But when it comes to stocks, there is no sense of logic to which way the surprises may come. We were surprised that the soybean stocks were as low as they were in the January report. That would suggest that we'd see low soybean stocks once again, that maybe USDA had overestimated the size of the crop. But if you look back at the history of USDA, just when you start thinking that, they come back with a surprisingly high stocks estimate the next quarter. So it's really difficult to pinpoint USDA's tendencies on these stock reports.
When it comes to how crop production in other nations will affect the U.S., Suderman points to how corn production in Brazil should be influencing corn planting intentions in the U.S. this year, but so far isn't.
Well, Brazil actually wanted to pump up its corn acres, but persistent rains prevented them from doing so during the month of February, so they're actually down a little bit. Now, they've had good weather since then, so their yield prospects are very good. But generally, we've been in a situation where Argentina and Brazil both have decreased corn acres. Ukraine is reducing corn acres. South Africa's corn production is down. And so from a global standpoint, we're reducing corn production at a time when we're increasing soybean production. So we really need to try to get some of those corn acres back and try to discourage soybean planting. But the market really hasn't seen it that way to this point.
When looking at the wheat markets, weather all over the world is looking to be a strong influencer on U.S. wheat prices.
Well, when we look at the wheat complex overall, there has been some concern about dryness in parts of Russia, China, and the U.S. plains. And overall, we've received some moisture in the U.S. plains. The next 2 weeks, though, are looking fairly dry, and so that crop is somewhat vulnerable. When you look at China and at Russia, generally, those areas that have been dry are expected to receive good moisture over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, easing concerns in those areas.
Again, that was market analyst for Water Street Solutions, Arlen Suderman, sharing his views on what will be influencing grain markets the most this week and in the near future. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.